Today I will be reading 1 Samuel chapter 30, verses 1 through 19. Now when David and his men came to the Ziklag on the third day, the Amalekites had made a raid against the Negev and against the Ziklag. They had overcome Ziklag and burned it with fire, and taken captive the woman and all who were in it, both small and great. They killed no one, but carried them off and went their way. And when David and his men came to the city, they found it burned with fire, and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him raised their voices and wept until they had no more strength to weep. David's two wives also had been taken captive, Ahinoam and Jezreel, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal and Carmel. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because all the people were bitter in soul, each for his sons and daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. And David said to Abiathar, the priest, and the son of Ahimelech, "Bring me the ephod." So Abiathar brought the ephod to David. And David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I pursue after this band? Shall I overtake them?" He answered him, "Pursue, for you shall surely overtake and shall surely rescue." So David set out, and the 600 men who were with him, and they came to the brook Besor, where those who were left behind. But David pursued him and 400 men. 200 stayed behind, who were too exhausted to cross the brook Besor. They found an Egyptian in the open country and brought him to David. And they gave him bread, and he ate. They gave him water to drink, and they gave him a piece of a cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit revived, for he had not eaten bread or drunk water for 3 days and three nights. And David said to him, "To whom you belong, and where are you from?" He said, "I am a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite, and my master left me behind because I fell sick 3 days ago. We had made a raid against the Negev of the Kerethites, and against that which belongs to Judah, and against the Negev of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire." And David said to him, "Will you take me down to this band?" And he said, "Swear to me by God that you will not kill me or deliver me into the hands of my master, and I will take you down to this band." And when he had taken him down, behold, they were spread abroad over all of the land, eating and drinking and dancing, because of all of the great spoil they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. And David struck them down from twilight until the evening of the next day, and not a man of them escaped, except 400 young men who mounted camels and fled. David recovered all of the Amalekites that had taken, and David rescued his two wives. Nothing was missing, whether small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything that had been taken. David brought back all.
Continuing from verse 20 through 31. David also captured all the flocks and herds, and the people drove the livestock before him and said, "This is David's spoil." Then David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow David, and who had been left back at the brook of Besor. And they went out to meet David and to meet the people who were with him. And when David came near to the people, he greeted them. Then all the wicked and worthless fellows among the men who had gone with David said, "Because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil that we have recovered, except that each man may lead away his wife and children and depart." But David said, "You shall not do so, my brothers. With what the Lord has given us, he has preserved us and given into our hand the band that came against us. Who would listen to you in this matter? For as his share is who he goes down into the battle, so shall his share be who stays by the baggage. They shall share alike." And he made it a statute and the rule for Israel from that day and forward to this day. When David came to Ziklag, he sent part of the spoil to his friends, the elders of Judah, saying, "Here is a present from you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord." It was for those in Bethel, in Ramoth, of the Negeb, in Jatir, in Aror, in Sipmoth, in Eshtemoa, in Rakal, in the cities of the Jeremelites, in the cities of the Kenites, in Hormah, in Borashan, in Atak, in Hebron, for all the places where David and his men had roamed.
All right, so you ready to head back into the Old Testament a little? So here's a question for you. How many of you have read 1 Samuel chapter 30 before? How many of you are like me, where you're like, well, I know I did a Bible study somewhere or a reading, or I've read the whole Bible, so I know I read it. But how many of you have ever sat and thought about the story that my young volunteers just went through? First time I came across this story was actually in a leadership talk. And, well, let's just put it this way. Since Stephen asked me to do this, and he said, well, what verse sticks in your mind? And I said, you know, there's a story. A few months ago, I listened to a leadership talk that a gentleman I know did that, the story just sticks in my mind. And he said, oh, what verse? And I said, oh, it's 1 Samuel chapter 30. And we sat down in his office and he read it. And in true Pastor Stephen fashion, he got all excited. Told me something that I've heard several times where he said, I've never preached on this before. I know I've read it. I know I've done Bible studies on it. I know I've done sermons where we've gone through it, but I've never actually preached on it. And basically at that point, he looked at me and he said, this is what you're preaching on, that this is the one. He was very, very excited and animated when he did that. So, all right, great. So I start getting into it and working into it, and he gives me some books that were like this thick of commentaries, and I go back and I listen to the leadership thing, and I read through it several times, and of course, if you really want to understand the story, well, you need to read all of 1 Samuel, but you at least need to go back into chapter 27 to look at it. And I've listened to some other sermons on it, and I went through the study Bible, and Stephen says, hey, we should get together, just talk through things before I leave. So I get together, and of course, I walk in, sit down. He's like, what are you thinking? I'm like, well, I kind of see it breaking down into three parts and this and that. And he gets up and flips around his whiteboard, and he's got a whole breakdown of it with all these references and all these different things. So why do I say all that? Well, let me tell you a story. Way, way back when Jennifer and I first got married, we were living in North Carolina, and we had a Rottweiler. Her name was Tasha. Great dog. One Friday morning, we get up. We worked at the same place, so we get up about 7:30. We put the dog outside. Dog comes back inside. We work all day Friday. Come home Friday night, it's raining. Go to let the dog out. We've been gone 9 hours, 9.5 hours, something like that. Usually, dog's pretty excited to go outside. I open the door. Dog walks outside. Raindrops fall on her head. She turns around, comes back inside. Try a couple more times before we go to bed. Still raining, not going outside. Wake up Saturday morning, still raining. Dog doesn't even get out the door. I open the door, she looks out the door, turns around, goes back and lays down. This goes until, I don't know, 12, 1 o'clock Saturday when it finally stops raining. Finally stopped raining. Go outside, open the door, dog runs outside. Let's just say that she had saved up lots of reasons to be outside, okay? Well, I kind of feel the same way. I've got all this Jesus stuff in there. I got a little bit of Sunday school stuff in there. I got a little bit of the book that I'm doing for study tonight in there, and I've got all of these things from 1 Samuel and all these things that tie into it. So I really do apologize right now. I have no idea what you're going to get. I have 8 pages of notes to go through. Katie gave me permission to keep you till 1:30 today because it's cold out and you don't have anything better to do. So that's kind of where I'm at. And, you know, just to make life more interesting, I don't know what my nose got into yesterday, but it decided that it was a good time for some allergies to hit. So between sneezing and the runny nose, and as you can hear, I'm losing a little bit of my voice. I have no idea. Luckily, I had already talked about having some assistants help me read. So thank you very much, guys. I figure that's going to give me at least an extra half an hour of this sermon that I can talk to everybody because I didn't have to read all that. And I didn't have to try and figure out some of those names and places. So anyway, so my best advice, try not to distract me because we're off. So I want to start out with 2 Timothy right now. And some of you may recognize chapter 3, verse 16, where it says, all scripture is profitable for teaching, reproof, correction, training in righteousness, and all that stuff. So if that's true, then this story has to be directly applicable to today. And as we go through this, what I want you to do is I want you to think about how this story would play out today. Because I'm going to tell you, you're going to look at this and you're going to say, yeah, that's exactly how it would be today. We throw a little bit of modernness in there and things like that. But that's basically what you're going to see. Now, let me kind of set the stage, because this is not David the shepherd. This is not David the played music for the king. This is not David the slayer of giants. This is not David that hung around with Saul's son and all of that stuff. This is David on the run. This is David the warrior, probably 18 years old or so, on the run from King Saul, okay? He's been anointed. Samuel said, Saul, I'm sorry, you're the king now, but you're really not the king because God said he's the king, so you need to let him be the king. And Saul said, no. And Saul got to the point where he's like, well, I'm just going to kill him. Then he can't be the king. So he mounts up on the, think about this. This is kind of like Joe Biden mounting up on the head of the Marines and coming out after you. Thank you. Okay? Doesn't that sound a little bit weird? I can't really, you picture Joe Biden on the top of a tank. Go get Matt Jones! Maybe not, but that's what Saul's doing, okay? So we're going to start this off. Like I said, we're going to look back into chapter 27. I'm going to read you some verses. And David said in his heart, now I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand. So David arose and went over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. Now, first of all, it's important to understand, as David is doing that, there's lots of little kinglets, okay? There's lots of kings and little kingdoms. This is, Maok is kind of like the king of Waukesha County, okay? And David goes, and basically David says, hey, you're my king and you're awesome and we're hanging out and having fun things, but you really don't need me and my men here. Why don't you give me my own little town that we can protect and all of those things? So he does. So basically David becomes the ruler of Dausman. Okay, just to put it in perspective. But what I want you to look at here is David's already done all these things. Okay, God, big G, has said, you're the king of Israel, but the current king won't yield. And God tells David, you're not going to kill him. There's actually several parts through Samuel where David was like, Saul, look at me. I'm here with my sword at your throat. I'm ready to kill you. Yield. And he says, no. And God says, don't kill him. That's not your place. So I guess you could say David's making the best out of a bad situation. Okay, it doesn't really say that God sent him to do this, that this was where he was supposed to be. But if you notice, God's still with him. And the whole time, 16 months, he's here. And as you read through chapter 27 and chapter 28 and chapter 29, you see David is actually still doing kingly things. He's still protecting the southern part of Israel, Judah. But then let's fast forward a little bit. I love this part because literally it says in chapter 29, and then the time came for, now I'm going to lose exactly how I said it, but basically, then the time came for the Philistines to go to war, to go to war with Israel. It's kind of like, you know, it's spring, it's fall, it's Halloween, it's daylight savings. Nope. Alarm went off on my phone. Let's get together. It's time to go to war with the Israelites. Okay? So all of the kings get all of their armies, and they all pack them up, and they head all the way up. If I could show you a map, they started out down here, and they went all the way up here. It says it took 3 days to get back from there, so at least 3 days to go up there. And David goes with, because at this point, David's even become the personal bodyguard of his king, the Philistine king. And as they're going up there, I can kind of picture this. All the other kings are like, why is this guy here? Why is this Israelite here? Why? And he's got his 600 men with him. Now, these aren't just like 600 soldiers walking out. No, these are 600 warriors, okay? I picture big, hairy guys with big weapons and everything, and you look at them, they growl at you a lot and things like that. Maybe not, but these are 600 warriors, and they're all like, you know, these guys are just as likely to turn. We're going to fight their countrymen. They're just as likely to turn on us and cut our heads off in this battle, so they get together with Achish, and they're like, dude, you got to send him home. You got to send him home, okay? So Achish gets together with David, and there's this whole exchange where literally David's like, my king, what have I done? Have I not proven my loyalty to you? You know, I'm here. I'm with you. Let's do this. And Achish says, for I have found nothing wrong in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Nevertheless, the Lord's do not approve of you, so go back now and go peaceably, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. That kind of weird. You may not displease the lords of your enemies that you're here to fight with against your own people. Just kind of looking like some really weird movie. Yeah, who's with me? So now here we have two perfect examples of David being rejected. Now, neither one of these did he do what would human nature do? Do you know who I am? Do you know who these guys are? You really want to go to battle without us? Do you not understand? Hey, brother, God said I'm supposed to be the king. I've spared your life twice now. You don't see how. Nope, David just goes on about his business. Okay? Is that how we would react? It's not how I would have reacted. Okay? How in today's day, what would be the normal reaction? Me, me, me. My, I. You don't understand. right? That seemed like the normal reaction to this. Well, let's look back in chapter 12 of Samuel, and let's get the godly reaction. Samuel said to the people, "Do not be afraid. You have done all this evil." Yeah, I read that correct. Do not be afraid. You have done all this evil. Well, that sounds like a pep talk in the making, doesn't it? "Yet do not turn aside from following the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. And do not turn aside after empty things that cannot profit or deliver, for they are empty. For the Lord will not forsake his people." That's how we're supposed to respond. That's the biblical response, okay? Here's a verse out of James, book that pastor's going through right now. "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God." Here's probably my favorite one from Psalm 27. "For my father and my mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me in." So this is where we're at, where we start the story, where things begin. Okay? And we're with David and his 600 men. They're on their way back, the three-day march back to their village. Where all their wives, where all their kids, where all the people they left behind, everybody who's not a warrior. Okay? Now here again, put a little logic in this. Back in the day, when David and his 600 left, they would not have left this village, this town, undefended. They would have left guards and warriors there. Okay? But the first thing that we find out is as they get back, they find that the village has been burned. And everybody's gone. They took every man, woman, child, young, old, all the stuff, all the life, everything's gone. Do you know what they say is not there? Where are the dead people? There were people left to protect this village. Doesn't sound like any of them died protecting the village. What logic this with me? What does that tell you? There was probably a point where this force showed up and it was so long, they just went, nope, not even going to try. Okay? The village was overwhelmed by so many people that there was no fight. And they took all the stuff and they left. Now, that's going to be important later. So David and everybody shows up. They find out everybody's gone. And it says that David and the people wept until they had no more strength. That's pretty tired, right? You weep until you have no more strength. Are you thinking really clear? Probably not. And then we find out David was greatly distressed. Why was he distressed? Because all the guys were talking about stoning him. Okay? These are all of his warriors that just were with him on this march. And can you kind of picture this? Well, you know, I told David that this wasn't a good idea. I don't know what he was thinking, taking us all the way up there to fight with those Philistines against my cousin. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Now we're back. Now everybody, why we were gone? Look what happened. It's just David. David should pay for this. This is just dumb. We should go talk. Let's stone him. Can you see this happening? Not the stoning part of it. Hopefully none of you are calling to stones. But can you see this happening today? What do we do when we are faced with defeat? What's our national? Somebody's got to be to blame. Somebody's got to be fault. There's a conspiracy here. There's something. That sound kind of like everything today? Certainly sounds like everything on TV today, doesn't it? That's a whole nother sermon. Okay, but what does David do? What's David's response to this? Does David come back and be like, no, no, I left people. No, we had guard. When we left, you were with me. You're with me now, all of a sudden it's my fault? That's not what David does. David strengthens himself in the Lord. Weston, you can stay. You don't have to go. Kind of waiting for him to holler off in the middle of this. Give me that little moral support. That doesn't mean you guys should, but you can. So he strengthens himself in the Lord. He calls the priest, and he says, go get the fancy scarf, headdress, garment thing that brings you closer to the Lord. Stephen tried to explain it to me. I don't understand what it was, but he's like, go get your thing. And he said, shall I pursue? And will I overtake? And the Lord says, yes, you shall pursue, and you will overtake, and you will rescue. All right, clear enough. He says, all right, guys, you heard it. Let's go mount up. We're off. The 600 guys, they mount up. They're like, we're going to go save everybody. I'm going to go get my comfy chair. I'm going to go get my Carrick. I'm going to go get my air fryer, my Xbox. We're going, getting my stuff back. Oh, and the wife and the kids, too. And they head off. It doesn't really say how long they go, but they go to the brook Besor. Now, you don't have to do this now. I was going to get a picture and send it to Katie to put up on the screen, but Google the brook Besor. Most of the pictures that I saw of the brook Besor are either some tourist going, and there's this little green snake-looking weedy spot going through the desert behind them, or it's a preacher doing this in front of it, or it's some sort of a tourist photo, but it's a brook. It's not very big, okay? There's pictures where, like, the dirt road goes through it. The walking path goes through it, not like wade through it, like, maybe I couldn't, but Owen could leap across it, okay? It's maybe this deep. It's not big cliffs. It's not some raging river. And let's remember who they're following. They're following this big band of soldiers that took all their stuff and all their people and are taking them with them. Would they have gone some really challenging, I'm going to take the steepest roads, I'm going to climb all the cliffs? No, they're going the easy way, and that's who they're following. But they get to the brook, and it says 200 of the guys are like, I'm just too tired, I can't go on. He said, David, you don't understand, my toe and my ingrown toenail, and it hurts when I walk, and I'm tired. Can you see it? And where did it really start? Do you think at one point, before they got to the brook, there was a guy who's like, I don't know. I mean, maybe we can rescue your wife, but mine didn't kiss me goodbye before I left to go to battle. My kids were just, they didn't clean up their room, and I don't know, maybe I don't want to go again. Maybe this is a chance I can get a new one. Oh, it sounds funny right now, but tell me, do you think in society in general, after being, I'm just dog tired, I'm too tired to go on, I'll just find me a new, do you think that doesn't sound like modern society right now? You tell me people don't get divorced for stupider reasons than having to cross a brook. But somehow it started, and a third of David's 600 mighty warriors don't make it across. But David goes on. 400, David, we're going to keep going. You stay there. I don't know what David said. I'm guessing at some point, whether it was David or somebody else, is like, really? You can't? You're just that tired, you can't do, that's too much. For your wife, and that, I'm sure somebody said that, but no. Off they go. And then they find an Egyptian. somebody who apparently was so sick that his master left him behind. They give him some food, they give him some water, they revive his spirit. I like the way they picked that word. They revived his spirit. And David says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm a servant of the guy that burnt your village, took all your stuff, all your Xboxes, all your comfy chair, your air, it's all over there." And he says, "Will you take me to the group that did this?" And he said, "If you swear to me by God that you won't kill me and you won't give me back to my master." Now, it's important that you read that. He says, "Swear to me by God." He doesn't say by your God. He doesn't say by my God, by the God, by a God, by God. Big G again. Okay? So clearly this guy has faith, and he knows where David's faith lies. Okay? Now, do you think David felt defeated? I went all the way up there, came all the way back down. They took all my stuff. They killed all my people, took my two wives, my kids, everything. And my own guys wanted to stone me. God says, "Go get them." Fellas, God said, "Let's go. Let's go." Then we get to the brook. They can't make it across the brook because they're too tired. You think some of the guys that didn't make it across the brook were... they had that other thought? "Well, you know, God said we'd be victorious. It's God's going to do it. It's not up to me. It's God already said he'd do it. He doesn't need me. I don't need to go. I can stay here. God will handle it. It's God." Now, that's true. God doesn't need any of those 200. God doesn't need any of us. But see, God chose God chose to shine his light through you to show his goodness. He chose to work through you, and he chose to give you the blessing. Now, it doesn't have to be to you. That could be to the 200 guys. Could be 400. But do you understand that's the way it works? He doesn't need you. He wants you. So, here we are. We're past the why me. Why didn't you go? Why didn't this happen? Why didn't they? And it says they came up over the valley, the area. They look over it. All these many guys are scattered all over the place. Now, what else did they find out? This isn't just the group that raided their village. They've been doing raids all over southern Judah. They've been attacking all kinds of other Philistine camps all over the place. This is a lot of people. Okay? We're just 400. Did you notice? I'll give you an idea. My brain does these things. But here's an idea of the scope of this. It says in here that they killed everyone. It doesn't say that. It says they slaughtered. We'll come back to that in a minute. Everyone except for 400 young men who got on camels and ran away. They make it sound like that 400 was a little itty-bitty piece of all of the rest of the people. Here's another little tidbit. It says that they slaughtered from, where'd it go? I want to read it. They struck them down from twilight until the evening of the next day. How long is that? 20 hours? 22 hours? Not quite 24 hours. That a long time? I can't even chase my kids around with a Nerf gun for 10 minutes without being winded. Now, granted, I would not be characterized as one of David's 600 mighty soldiers. But I can remember being in best shape of my life, coming out of high school, playing football and everything. Some of you played football, some of you wrestled. I'll use wrestling. I can grab onto Will and wrestle with him for about 30 seconds and I'm winded. Some of you guys do that for like 45 seconds and stuff like that and you're absolutely exhausted. Parker, right? You go and full on wrestle with somebody, you're exhausted, right? All right, now what's it like when you're going to slaughter for 20 hours? It's probably pretty tiring. And there's only 400 escaped. And David goes in with 400. Anyway. But they're victorious. They get all the stuff back. They don't get all of their stuff back. They get all of the stuff from all the other places that they raided back. Plus, they get all the stuff that the Amalekites had themselves. It's a lot of stuff. And as they're bringing all the stuff back, as they're driving the flocks, what do the people in the front driving the flocks say? This is David's. This is David's stuff. This stuff belongs to David. So how do we respond to victory? Sounds like David's people responded like, oh yeah, look what we did. Look at all of our stuff. The leadership talk that I listened to, he kept using the word booty. I have a hard time with that because I keep flipping back and forth between Pirates of the Caribbean and like 80s and 90s songs. So we'll just stay away from that word. I told you, there's too much in there. But isn't that the normal reaction? So they come over the hill. Can you picture this? 400 guys, all the flocks, they come over the hill and they reunite with the 200. How do you think the 200 are doing now? Probably rested. They had some food, hung out. Maybe got out a guitar and sang as they ate. And it's taken a while. Okay? Week? Days? Something. And here they come. The flocks and the people and the warriors and all of this stuff. How do you think they're, what's going on? You think some of them are like, they're back. I picture John McClane in Die Hard, that scene where he's walking into the vault. He's all beat up and bloody, and he's like, hi, honey. You picture that? What do you do if you're one of those 200 guys, and there's my wife. I picture little six-year-old kid that probably just ate too many Fruity Pebbles, and he comes around, Dad, you wouldn't believe it. Johnny's dad came running in, he had a sword, and Mr. Thomas from down the road, he came in on his big camel, and he had a shield and everything, and they killed all these guys and everything. I didn't see you there. I was looking for you, Dad. And then you look behind him, and your wife's standing there, and she's like, yeah, I didn't see you there. I had my toe and my... You think some of them were working on their reason why? Doesn't cover any of that in there, but does that sound about right? Sound about normal? Yeah, I can see all that going on. And then we get to the point, the wicked and the worthless fellows. What does it mean when they address you as fellows? Hey, fellows. This is part of the men that rode with David that now are being described as weak, worthless, and wicked. What do they say? Those 200 of you that didn't go with, you can have your wives and your kids back. I think some are going, didn't come and get me, and I don't get my iPad back. Not gonna get my TV back. How can you can have your wife and your kids and go on your way. The rest of the spoils goes to us. And what does David say? David says, no, that's not the way that it works. That's not the way this works. The Lord gave this to us. You know, that set of precedents that's still used in the military today. It says in here, for as his share is who goes into the battle, so shall his share be who stays with the baggage. They shall share alike. It's the way the army still does it today. Doesn't matter, you're part of the army, you're part of the group that went to war, doesn't matter if you were there or not. You all get recognized as it. And then not only that, everybody gets an equal share, but he goes and he sends it to 12 or 15 different villages, cities, groups, people that helped him along the way, people that took the brunt of this attack, everything else. He paints a picture. Now, I don't know that that's the way I would have reacted to a victory like that, but David does. I mentioned Psalm 27 before. Psalm 27 is actually written by David. Let me read some more of it to you. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers assail me to eat my flesh, my adversaries and foes, it is they who stumble and fall. Though an army encamped against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war arise against me, yet I will be confident. One thing have I asked of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For he will hide me in his shelter in the day of trouble. He will conceal me under the cover of his tent. He will lift me high upon the rock. And now my head shall be lifted up above my enemies all around me. And I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing and make melody to the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry aloud. Be gracious to me and answer me. You have said, seek my face. My heart says to you, your face, Lord, do I seek. Hide not your face from me. Turn not your servant away in anger. O you who have been my help, cast me not off. Forsake me not, O God of my salvation. For my father and my mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me in. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me on a level path because of my enemies. Did you notice he never says in there, take my enemies away? He never says, because I have no struggles. He never says, because you have given me this easy path. All throughout those verses, he says, because my path is hard, because my enemies are there, because the struggle is real, draw me to you. That's the picture of the way we're supposed to react. But it was interesting, we talked about this in Sunday school this morning. That's the way we're supposed to act. That's the godly way. But the fallen nature is the other way. This whole prayer of David is, this is the way I'm naturally wired, but this is the way I want to be wired, so help me be more this way because I'm naturally tended to go this way. It's the forever fight. It's not the forever fight, though. It's the all of your life fight. But at the end of it, there's a victory. Here's just one more verse. Pastor really likes this verse. In his notes, it said, especially this verse. So, the horse is made ready for the day of battle, but the victory belongs to the Lord. We make ourselves ready for the battle in what we do, in what we strive for, in what we want it to be like. but the victory is not ours. So, what does this mean? Jesus was rejected. Jesus was rejected by his own people. Jesus was rejected by his best friends, by his disciples. Jesus was rejected by his own father. God left him to die a human death and to take all of the punishment for sin. All of it. By himself. But it was only for a time. He was abandoned. He was rejected. He was defeated. He was defeated by death, but only for a time. Because he was victorious, he rose, he defeated death and rose again. He took the burden of all of the punishment and made it through to the other side. And what does he do with his victory? Did he keep any of it for himself? He gave it all away. He gave it the ultimate victory, and he gave it all away. And he gave it to you. Everybody says he gave it to us, but us makes it seem like it's not me. But no, he gave it to me. That was the end of the lesson in Sunday school today. How should you feel if somebody says to you, Jesus defeated everything, and in his victory, he took the spoils and he gave it to you. To you. How does that make you feel? How should you reply? Greatest victory in the universe. He gave it to you. He gave it to me. That should weigh on you a little bit. That's the point of Matthew 20. That's the point of what Owen read. Not a competition. Nobody in here gets more of the spoil, gets more of the victory than anybody else. Doesn't matter when you started. It doesn't matter if you were the last one to get there. The victory is the same for all of us. Did you see that pause for dramatic effect? There's a gap in here right now because I had no idea Now what? Now the now what is we're going to sing, closing hymn. I'll come up and read you something else that Stephen said. But that's not the now what, is it? The purpose of the sermon wasn't what David did. The purpose of the sermon is how did David react? My life is not going to be any better than David's. My journey is not going to be any easier. Different. Nobody in here is going to be any easier. Nobody's going to be any better. None of it's going to make more sense. Sometimes it will. Sometimes it won't. None of it's going to be fair. None of it's going to look good from the outside. So what? So what? What are you going to do next?